Kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, The March to Arbela, Part 2. Now, according to Arrian, the Persians had 1 million infantry and 200,000 horsemen. Theodorus and Plutarch reduced this to 1 million foot soldiers and horsemen combined. Justin says 500,000 in total, while Curtius gives us the lowest estimate of 200,000 infantry and 450,000 cavalry, and even this would be at the summit or beyond what was logically possible to supply in the field. There is a very fair chance that the Persian army in 31 BCE was substantially larger than the one defeated at Issus, and everything suggests that the cavalry outnumbered the Macedonian horsemen by a very large margin, and some would even accept a figure of 40 to 45,000 cavalry. Many were excellent horsemen, and Darius had issued some of the longest spears and better swords, doing his best to learn from earlier defeats. The cavalry were what mattered, for many of them were of very high quality, but the infantry numbers mattered very little, since they were incapable of standing up to Macedonian or Greek infantry in close combat. There is no mention of the close order Cardox coming in the battle with a contingency of mercenary hoplites numbered no more than a few thousand. And apart from a 1,000-strong royal bodyguard of apple bearers, it means with a golden apple instead of a butt spike on their spears, the remainder were of little use except to pursue in the event of victory or flee and be massacred in the case of defeat. Darius's army looked impressive because of its sheer size, but it also strained resources to feed it. Yet appearances were important for the Persian king, so once again he went to war in appropriate pomp and luxury. More practically, he planned to win with his cavalry and gathered 200 scythe chariots to assist him. Alexander marched for just under 300 miles, probably via Haran, the ancient city known from the book of Genesis, and called Carrhae in the Roman period, and Nisibis until he reached the Tigris River in September, probably near modern-day Mosul. Until the last stage, he had not forced the pace, moving steadily and giving his men rest periods. The capture of some Persian scouts gave him a rare snippet of intelligence, claiming that Darius had sent men to defend the river, so he forced march to get there first. As it turned out, the story was untrue, and the Macedonians crossed unopposed. At this time of the year, the river was shallow enough to ford, so there was no need to construct a bridge, although our sources claim that men and horses struggled against the strong current. Alexander gave his men 2 days to rest and recover, and then they took care to reassure them when there was a lunar eclipse on the night of September the 20th and 21st. The king offered sacrifices to the earth, the sun, and the moon. For educated Greeks, they understood what an eclipse was, while Aristander, the diviner, announced that the omen was bad only for Darius and good for the Macedonians. The advance resumed along the east bank of the Tigris, and 2 days later, patrols from the Prodomo light horse sighted strong forces of Persian cavalry. Alexander ordered a halt and began deploying for battle until another rider came in to say that there were barely 1,000 Persians. Taking a squadron of his companions, Paeonians, to reinforce the Prodomo, Alexander headed for the enemy, who promptly withdrew, although not before one of Alexander's officers speared a Persian nobleman and brought his severed head to the king. A long chase followed, and a few men whose horses gave out were killed or taken by the Macedonians, and the prisoners revealed that Darius was not far off with a very large army. After weeks of groping blindly, each side now had a clearer idea where the enemy was. Sometime before, Darius had realized the Macedonians were not coming down the Euphrates, so he moved up the Tigris, knowing that this was the only other viable route for an invading army. His own great host was not suited for rapid maneuver, nor could it stay too long in one place. For his plan to work, he needed open country and could not risk ending up in the same sort of restricted terrain that had hindered him at Issus. As he marched, he looked for suitable battlefields, and by this time he had settled on one a little north of the city of Arbela. There he halted and waited for Alexander to come to him. Although it is more likely that the Macedonians had not been contacted, he would have moved again in due course. Alexander halted, chose a good site for camp, and brought up the rest of his army. Men labored to fortify the camp for the plan to leave his heavy baggage there, but otherwise he gave his troops 4 days to rest and prepare for the coming engagement. At Granicus, he needed a quick battle. At Issus, Darius disappeared behind him and left him no choice other than to fight. Now he didn't need to hurry and could give the army a time that they needed to recover. After nearly 3 months of long marches, taking only his fighting troops and light baggage carrying supplies for a few days, he waited until the cover of darkness before marching with the intention of being ready to fight as soon as dawn. As the late September sun rose, there were some 7.5 miles from the Persians. Neither of the main forces could see each other, for the hills blocked their lines of sight. But the Persians were also ready for battle, either because their scouts had revealed the Macedonian advance, or as a simple precaution since they knew that the enemy was close. It was not until they were less than 4 miles apart that the two armies saw each other, at which point Alexander halted and called his officers together. This, at least, in the essence of Arrian's version. Other sources differ over the details. Curtius has Darius attempt to bribe the Greeks with the army to turn against the Macedonians, then places the death of his wife Satira at this point, followed by a final attempt at negotiation. Most of his narrative has a moral purpose. Whether it is Parmenion persuading Alexander not to make public the captured letters, attempting to bribe the Greeks, or declaring that he would accept a peace offer, it is here we have Alexander's quip that he would also accept if he were Parmenio. The death of Satira gave Curtius and others a rich seam to mine, for he has a eunuch escaped to bring the news, and a Darius who is heartbroken, then suspicious when he hears how well Alexander treated his wife, until finally convinced that he had not raped her or seduced her, at which point he supposedly prayed aloud that if he should fall, only the Macedonian king to succeed him. None of this seems very likely, and at the least, any truth has been so embellished as it is almost unrecognizable. So next time we will start the battle. Now the sources for this: The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrian's, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.